Our governor calls Utah the startup capital of the world. And it tracks. We've got a fast-growing, well-educated population and a buzzing economy. And just last week, Utah unveiled the Startup State Initiative, a resource portal for entrepreneurs. From step-by-step guides to a business plan generator, startup.utah.gov is now the first stop for starting or growing a business here. That's startup.utah.gov. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. Construction cones and road detours remind us that we are building everything in this city. But there is one thing we are not building, and that is condominiums, apartments you can own. According to the census, condominiums make up just 5% of multifamily developments. But why? I was raised in one, I currently rent one, and many Salt Lakers would like to buy one. So will they ever come back? It's Monday, April 8th. I'm Ali Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Dayan Eskich, you are a senior research fellow at the Kemsey Gardner Policy Institute, and your expertise is housing. So my question for you is, why is it so hard to build condos in Salt Lake City and Utah broadly?
I mean, it's complicated everywhere, so it's not just a Utah problem. You know, to simplify, it has to do with legal risk and financial risk.
Okay. Doesn't everything?
Yeah, but especially in condos. So like if you look everywhere around the city and really around like the Wasatch Front, there's a lot of apartments for construction. And the reason developers are more enticed to go the apartment route rather than the condo route is there's one owner. So if there's any defects, any issues, you're not going to see yourself. Or with condos, that's a big sticking point. And then also it has to do when banks look at it. So they see that legal risk. So they require you to put more money down. And so you as a developer now have to put more cash down. So your return, it messes with your returns. And then also you don't get the appreciation because you've sold off units. You don't get the appreciation of a longer hold for an apartment building. So as you know, the market grows, prices appreciate, you lose out on that appreciation.
Okay. Can I say back to you my incredibly cynical interpretation of what you said? And you let me know if I'm off here. But what I heard was, it's easier for an HOA to sue you if you're a builder and you build poorly and you can't raise the rent on condos.
It's not false.
Okay.
But I think, you know, there's a lot more nuance to it. But especially with that, you know, like the statute of limitations, like each state is different. In Utah, it's like 6 to 9 years. I'm not a legal expert. So
totally
I was trying
fine.
to read through this in preparation, but it's that risk of like 6 to 9 years. So whatever happens in the building, now you're liable. And then, you know, that just spirals in a way.
Can you quickly define for me what a condo is? Because I always think I understand. And then I'm like, is a townhome a condo? Like, how is it different from an apartment?
Yeah. So like the condo townhome gets mixed and everybody sees them similarly, but like we have to think of the structure. So you look at a townhome, units usually are not stacked on top of one another. They share adjacent walls. It's like very technical, nerdy census definitions where the unit has its own entry point, where a condo building is literally like an apartment building. You share common space, you share an entry point into the building itself. And so there's a lot, you know, units are stacked on one another. Some units share three walls, some units may share four walls, right? Depending on how they're designed. But it really, you know, from like a standpoint, the more walls you share, the bigger the risk. And then it comes down to ownership too. So from a condo perspective, you only own the interior walls of your unit. You don't own anything on the exterior. That's the HOA. So you're all paying into a common area. So like townhomes still have HOAs for like the roof and the facade and, you know, the lawn and all that stuff. Whereas condo, it's really like you're responsible for what happens inside. And then HOA is responsible for everything, the halls, the entryway, all that stuff.
Interesting. And There are HOAs for not condos or townhomes too, just as an aside, right? Like if you live in Daybreak, you pay an HOA fee, which we should define, a homeowners association, which is almost like a governing board slash union for the property.
Yeah, you know, I have mixed feelings on HOA. I was the treasurer for my HOA for a while when I lived in a tall 15-story condo.
And that's a curse.
It's part of the reason why I sold and left. But yeah, so really any entitled subdivision can form an HOA. So like, you know, 5-10 people living on a street, they can form an HOA. It's not subject to just a building, it's more subject to an area. So really, HOAs can exist anywhere if people choose to vote into forming an HOA.
Interesting. Back to condos. We do have them here, though it feels like as of late, we see more apartment buildings popping up than condo buildings. All of our condos are older. I live in one. Mine was built in like the 1960s. Mm-hmm. When was Utah building condos and what changed?
Yeah, so I think the last big condo development, you know, that you could say like a high-rise building was probably City Creek.
Oh, those are condos? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it all has to do with the entity that built it, right? Like it's the church builds it, so you know, their interests are a little different, say, than, you know, if you and I started a development company, we're going to go build condos. Part of it too, like what changed is like this legal apparatus, right? Like our first wave of condos happened in like the 70s and 80s. But also like we're getting, technically we are building, you know, there's a lot of infill, so you'll see like a lot of developers that are picking up random little sites and they're putting like 4 or 5 row homes. Hmm. You know, they treat those, I mean, they condominiumize, right? It's fractional ownership on that land, but it's not like the traditional high-rise condo you and I would think about. So really, we've not had much traditional condo development probably in the last 2 decades. Hmm. And a lot of it comes down to, you know, the laws changing, that statute of limitation of risk, then banks requiring more financing. Then also there's like federal regulations on, so say like the condo building I live, Bonneville Towers near the avenues, like usually condos are cheaper, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time when condos are cheaper, it attracts buyers, say they're looking for like FHA financing where like the government gives you basically like a break on your interest rate. Mm-hmm. But there are rules how many FHA mortgages you can have in a building. So that further complicates the part of it. So it's like in the building I lived, you couldn't have 10% of units be financed by FHA. So like if you're trying to build affordable units, likely those people are going to get this government subsidized financing, and that, you know, those units are going to be quick. So then you're left with a bunch of other units that are going to take a while to sell.
And FHA is the Federal Housing Administration. So that would be like basically government lending.
Yeah. So it's like when I bought my condo in 2013, I used the FHA loan and it was great. 3.5% down payment.
Incredible.
Good interest rate. So
when did all these regulations change? Was there a sort of like a financial moment that we were in nationally that timed with all these regulations coming into play that make it harder to build condos?
Yeah, a lot of it came in like the 70s and 80s, especially after we had some turmoil with interest rates and savings and loans kind of falling apart, that whole debacle. Mm. Another conversation for another day.
Yeah.
So like, for example, like American Towers downtown, you know, they were built in the 80s and that building took like 10 years to absorb, to like get occupied. So like, you got to think like that's a huge financial risk.
When I think about the like built environment of downtown Salt Lake, I for some reason always equate condos with luxury. And it's been interesting to see so many of the new luxury housing that's popping up be apartments. Like, I think an example for me would be the Astra Tower. Like, just looking at that and thinking about the cost of it, the way it's being marketed, it's glitzy. Like, who with enough money to live in something like the Astra Tower wants to rent? Like, what does that say about the moment we're in?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, we have a couple of those projects. We have Liberty Sky Astra, and I think there's another one. It's not popping into my head, but it's a new level for our market, right? Like, we've been growing for so long, and now, you know, there's a very niche market that looks at Salt Lake, and it's like, we're missing a little bit of the luxury. So just like we have a housing shortage on the affordable side, we also have a housing shortage on the luxury side, right? And it's always easier to build to the luxury market because you don't have the, you know, financial constraints of getting a return. And so, you know, just anecdotally, you know, what I'm hearing is the Liberty Sky apartments, they're close to being fully leased. Like, there's not much vacancy. So they're performing better than I expected. And then, you know, with Liberty Sky, everything that's coming on, you know, there's penthouses. But you got to also think, like, where we are in our growing journey, we're becoming more of a destination too. So, you know, we have international flights. So people come to Salt Lake directly and they come here to ski. So there is a market. It's not huge, but it's enough that we could probably have, you know, three or four luxury apartment buildings that can serve a population of that interest.
I mean, one of the reasons I like renting is the environmental insecurity of living here. I feel like I have an out. It's like every May I can decide if I want to keep breathing this air.
Yeah, it's a little challenging, but yeah. You know, there are definitely perks to renting. You know, when I lived in a condo, it was like I felt like I'm a problem away from like the whole building falling apart. You know, pipe bursts, it goes down three floors, and then you make $1 million insurance claim.
Yeah.
So there's definitely challenges to it.
Mother's Day is on the horizon, and the good news is that you can find everything you need at Harmon's. Whether it's a little something to brighten Mom's Day or a memorable spread, here are a few ideas. For breakfast, try Harmon's house-baked cinnamon rolls with freshly squeezed orange juice and a package of fresh-cut strawberries. If you're spicing it up with Bloody Marys, don't forget that Harmon's has an olive bar with over 12 different varieties. Now, flowers are the perennial favorite, and you can order online or pop by the store last minute, shop succulents, potted plants, and elaborate arrangements. May's flower of the month is the hydrangea, very appropriate. Hydrangeas are fragrant and elegant. And if sweets are in order, Harmon's has added raspberry to their selection of brownie flavors. Find all mom's favorites at your local Harmon's or order online at harmonsgrocery.com. Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita, a delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah Margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. Homeownership is still, in some ways, the American dream, quote unquote. But how does the cost of renting an apartment in Salt Lake City compare to buying a condo right now?
Yeah, so I'll answer that in two parts. So, and these are national numbers. We don't have like solid Utah numbers and then let alone Salt Lake numbers. But if you're a homeowner in the U.S., your median net worth is just like under $400,000. But if you're a renter, it's like $11,000. So it's like orders of magnitude. So you really miss out on wealth creation. So yeah, there's other avenues for wealth creation, but how great is it that you get, you know, two for one, you have a stable living environment and you're creating wealth. So when we look at like, you know, what does it cost in Salt Lake City? So say a rental, a two bedroom apartment on average is roughly $1,800. So if we translate that $1,800 and we assume that's your mortgage payment at today's interest rate, that gets you about $290,000 worth of purchasing power.
I mean, you just can't do that in Salt Lake City.
No. So the average condo in Salt Lake City sells for about $100,000 more, about $385,000. So when you take account that interest rate, so then your mortgage on that $385,000 would be roughly $2,300. So right now we find ourselves in one of those weird environments where it's actually cheaper to rent than to buy. And that's true on single family homes as well. So like if you look at single family homes, the average mortgage is $3,500 if you're buying today, where if you're renting, it's about $2,200. So there's orders of magnitude difference on that monthly payment.
Yeah, there's just no entrant into the market.
Not at the moment. If we look at rent, on average renters in Utah, like 90% of renters are priced out of the median priced home. So you're just stuck renting at the moment.
Our governor knows this is a problem. He's talked about it at length. He asked for quite a bit of money in his budget this year to build more starter homes. But when I hear the legislature and the governor's office talk about starter homes, it feels like the vision that they paint is what you see kind of in the south end of the valley. It's sprawl. It's similar looking side by side communities. It's a daybreak, right?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily density, though I will say to his credit, it does seem like he's open to density in a way that surprised some people. How important are condos in the grand scheme of our affordable housing crisis? Like, is this just a personal obsession of mine because it's what the lifestyle I seek, or is it more?
No, not at all. I mean, when we look at sort of like how we think we're going to grow, it's sort of going to come in like thirds. Third of it is going to be like out there sprawl. Third of it is going to be infill, like these random little pockets we find everywhere. And then third of it is probably going to be around transit. So condos have a huge role to play, especially if we're going to focus on ownership. Like we should not be building single family homes around transit station. That's insane. But to that point though, like what we saw in this legislative session is there's some density increases. So, you know, I live in a 2,200 square foot home on like a really small lot. My home today, like it's illegal to build in almost every city across the Wasatch Front. So it's like think of a car, right? Like you can go buy any sort of size car you want, a little hatchback to a Chevy Tahoe. We're like, we don't have that range of options in new construction. We're very limited by zoning on what is allowed to be built. So that's why you get like the cookie cutter stamps, copy and paste, because zoning doesn't allow it. Like if you look at the zoning code for like the Yalecrest neighborhood from the 1940s, it's very broad. It just says like keep homes that like this is your size and everything else you basically do whatever you want. We're way more restrictive today than we were, you know, 50, 60 years ago. So that's why we're getting what we see out there and people are frustrated.
I mean, I feel like I can ask you a question that's pointed because you are a researcher. How many condos do we need and where do we need them?
So if we look at who lives in condos, right, it's like 1 to 2 person households typically. You know,
yeah.
if we look at where our kids live, 75% of them live in single family homes. So typically, you know, once you have kids and, you know, I live this. My daughter was born like a few months before COVID and we lived in a 15-story building and then COVID started and the earthquake happened. I'm like, I'm getting out of here. But you know, if you look at like across Salt Lake City, 55% of, you know, almost 60% probably rent. And majority of people that rent in Salt Lake City that are 1 or 2 person households, you know, I'd say over 65 to 70% live in a building that has 5 or more units in it. And a third live in like 50 unit plus building. So like there is a market there and just generalizing, I think most people, again, you stated like you prefer to rent, but I think I'd say probably more than half would probably want to buy, but they can't. There's not that option. So
yeah,
I mean, that's why we see so many apartments being built is because there is a demand for that product.
I also think, isn't it kind of a myth that you can't raise a family in a condo? I mean, people in New York City do it every day. I grew up in a condo. Like, if it's big enough, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess, is it like a chicken or an egg thing? Like, are kids leaving this and families leaving the city because there isn't a condo-style market for them? They don't want to rent a 2-2. Or is it that we're not building like that because we don't necessarily have families that have the interest?
No, I think it all depends on your surroundings, right? Like when you have amenities around your apartment or condo, I don't think it's a problem. I think Mayor Mendenhall talked about this not too long ago. There was like one slide in the downtown area, right? So like if you want people, more children and stuff in a downtown area, you have to amenitize it. You have to have parks, you have to have schools and all that stuff. So I don't disagree with you on that. Like it's, yeah, like you said, other places do it. But I think also there's a cultural component, right? Like in Utah, most people want the single family home, but now it's like, well, you can't afford one. So what's next?
Yeah. The nuclear family is still alive in Utah in a way that it maybe isn't in other places.
Yeah. We're one of few states probably.
Yeah. Well, you're from a policy institute, so I have to ask you, policy-wise, what can state and local governments do to pave the way for more condos? I'm hearing a bit of an all roads lead to the legislature in terms of some of this governance, but surely there's wiggle room.
Yeah, so there's complications, right? Because there's state statutes, but then there's also federal things. So again, it all goes down to the legal aspect of it. And it's really challenging, right? Because you're like, you want to incentivize it. So what do you do? Okay, relax statute of limitations. But then, you know, are you just incentivizing for crappier development, less safe development, right? So
I think the
only place really, like when we look at the U.S., where do we build condos? Okay, it's like New York and then Miami, maybe L.A., and then a lot of, you know, second home communities. So like Park City, right? Like there's always like a condo or two up there, but that market is so expensive that they can offset all of these other risks to hit that price point. That price, high price point offsets it.
That's a good point. I didn't even think of that genre of condos, which is like basically buying into resort ownership.
Yeah. There is not like a simple fix here, unfortunately.
Is there anything that like a city could do to, because we talked at the beginning of how there's the sort of the two aspects. There's the legal aspect and the statute of limitations. And then there's the viability for developers. Like you and I aren't the LDS church. We can't just build and not fret about ROI. Are there things the city could do to incentivize the ROI piece?
Yeah, I mean, so what passed this legislature, I think it's called like the FIZ, First Time Home Buyer Zones.
Oh, yeah.
So that allows you to sort of basically use RDA money to incentivize a lot of aspects of the development costs. So like there is creative opportunities there. And I think we're going to learn in the next year to how to efficiently use that legislation. But there's, you know, the same way we subsidize low-income housing tax credits, you know, you could nothing is preventing a city from using some of their tax increment financing or other revenues to help offset some of that financial risks with the condo.
I'm not feeling very optimistic. Is there anything you can...
No, housing is very depressing. You know, the only thing that'll save us is like, and we find ourselves in like this very peculiar demographic wave, the U.S. and Utah, where, you know, 2020 to 2024, 2025, we're always going to be high demand housing years, where basically the first wave of the millennials are turning 30 and like actually getting their crap together and wanting to do adult things. So you pour low interest rates as a result of COVID and all hell breaks loose, right? That's why like housing prices are so high, because we had basically free money.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as we age into the 2030s, sort of the momentum shifts from millennials needing housing to baby boomers wanting to offload their housing. So I think like as we get into the next decade, I think the housing pressures are going to be a little different. They're going to be more baby boomer focused than millennials. And so that's like my optimism pitch is wait it out for another 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm hearing you say is, Allie, most of your neighbors are boomers and eventually they'll sell their condos and you just have to lay in wait.
Sure.
Dayan Eskich with the Kemsey Gardner Policy Institute. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
If you want to learn more about the state of condo development in Utah, have I got an event for you. Industry experts are gathering on Friday, April 12th at the Downtown Library from 3 to 5 p.m. The agenda includes 15-minute presentations about the state of condo development, followed by an audience Q&A. I put a registration link in the episode description. That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Thank you for listening, and thank you to our founding CityCast Salt Lake members. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city. Bye.